Welcome to those joining us for this shiur. Because we're coming close to the holiday of Pesach, I thought to possibly go over the Haggadah based on what I heard and what I saw from my rabbi, Rabbi Rosenfeld, who was an outstanding Talmud Chacham, very knowledgeable in all areas of Torah, the halacha, the customs, the Kabbalah, everything, and try to share with those that are listening, you know, many of the highlights, many of the interesting points that were said related to the Haggadah of Pesach. That's a time when we get together with family, with friends, and it's a time when people are supposed to ask questions and get answers. So we'll try to share some of the questions, some of the answers, some of the interesting points that are related. Even before we get to the Haggadah, a prelude to the holiday of Pesach is Shabbos Haggadol, it's called. And it's interesting that that's the name Shabbos HaGadol, you know, the great Shabbos. What does that tell us about it? So Rabbi Nachman has a chapter in Likutei Moran, chapter 250, where he speaks about miracles. And the miracles that we experience in the world today, where does it come from? And he explains that nowadays, we are not living in a time that's normally suitable for miracles. It's in the future. When Mashiach will come, that's the time. There's a pasuk, Ki Meitzeischa Me'eretz Mitzrayim, just like during the days when you left Egypt, Ar'enu Niflois, I'm going to show you wondrous miracles. The word Niflois itself is an interesting word. The word Pele means wondrous. And the word Pele, according to Kabbalah, is related to the highest one of the Midos of Hashem, the Midah of Keser, the crown, which is the highest level among the 10 levels of holiness that we attribute to Hashem, is associated with the word Pele. Pele means wondrous, and the word Pele is the letters Aleph, Aleph Lamed Pei, which spells the word Aleph, 1,000, and also Aleph means number one, the beginning, the highest level. The word Niflois, it's brought, is Nun Plois, 50 wonders. The number 50, according to the Torah, also represents a certain peak, a certain incredible height. We know that we have the mitzvah of counting the Omer. We count 49 days, and then we get to the 50th level. Shavuos is called the 50th level. We're told there are 50 levels of Bina, 50 levels of understanding. So both of these terms, we mentioned the word Niflois, that it's mentioned that Hashem is going to show us Niflois when Moshiach comes. Why then specifically? Because we're told that the period preceding Moshiach's coming is compared to the 6 days of the week, and after Moshiach comes is compared to Shabbos. Shabbos, we know, is the symbol of faith in Hashem. When a person goes to work, they're implying sort of that I need to do something in order to have parnasa. When a person doesn't go to work, they're making it perfectly clear that I believe I can exist even without my own efforts, because my existence actually comes from Hashem. Hashem is the provider of everything. So Shabbos is called the foundation of faith in Hashem. That's how we display our faith in Hashem. And Rabbi Nizal writes in Likutei Moran, that in chapter 7 in Likutei Moran, that faith and prayer and miracles are all one. It's one category. Because in order to pray, a person has to believe. There are people that think that everything is predestined. If everything is predestined, then there's nothing I can do to change it in any way. And because of that, Chas v'Shalom, there are people who don't pray or they don't take prayer seriously. Whereas we believe that even though there is a concept of things being predestined, But through prayer, we have the ability to change that. And Hashem has the ability, even though things are predestined to a degree, Hashem has the ability to go in anytime he wants and override and change destiny. So prayer and faith and miracles go together, because again, a miracle implies a change in from the norm, a change from nature. Nature would dictate that things should go a certain way, and Hashem can override that. Just like in the example when the Jews were battling Amalek, and it says that the sun stopped at the time in order to give them the additional time that they needed to accomplish, you know, the results of the war that Hashem wanted them to accomplish. Or all the miracles, the plagues in Egypt, where Moshe Rabbeinu was able to turn water into blood and blood into water. You know, it's all of these miracles. So it's brought that all of this is related to Shabbos. Shabbos represents faith. Shabbos represents miracles. And therefore, when we celebrate the holidays, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, of which Pesach is the first one of the set, they all, and each one of the holidays, what we're really celebrating is the miracles that took place on that holiday. On Pesach, it's all the miracles related to the Jews going out of Egypt. On Shavuos, it's the miracles that the Jews witnessed at Mount Sinai. The Gemara tells us that there were major miracles that took place over there. It says, V'chol ha'om royim es ha'koilos. The entire nation was able to see the sounds of Matan Torah. So number one, the fact that the entire nation was able to see, the Gemara shows that whoever was blind before was miraculously cured, healed. And the Gemara shows that whoever couldn't walk was able to, a miracle took place where everyone was given whatever cure and healing they needed. So those are the miracles that surrounded Matan Torah. The Jews were able to hear the voice of Hashem and to see Hashem on their level. It says, Hashem says, I spoke to you face to face. And Sukkos, we have the miracles of the seven clouds that accompanied the Jews throughout their travels in the desert, that washed and laundered and tailored their clothing, and in addition, flattened out all mountains in front of them and raised up all valleys to make it easier for them to travel. So holidays, the main message in the holidays is miracle, that Hashem can perform miracles, Hashem can override nature. The holidays begin from Pesach, and Pesach begins from Shabbos HaGodol. Shabbos HaGodol meaning to show us that all miracles originate and draw their power from Shabbat, from Shabbos. Shabbos, we said again, represents the future. The future, we're told in the future, when Mashiach comes, there's going to be major miracles. Any miracles that we experience today or in the past thousands of years are all drawing from the future, drawing from that place in the future when it'll be natural to have all of these miracles. And how do we see that the word Godol is associated with miracles? There's a pasuk by Elisha Hanavi, who was the closest student of Eliyahu Hanavi, where the pasuk says, Sapruno li es hagedolos she'osa Elisha. Tell me the great things that Elisha Hanavi performed. And it's referring to the miracles that he performed. And the Gemara says in Brachas that all of the miracles that Elisha Hanavi performed, he performed them through prayer, through tefillah. So this is the message, this is one of the major messages in Shabbos HaGodol leading up to Pesach, that it's teaching us that the miracles of this holiday of Pesach, where do they come from? They come from the future. It's Hashem drawing, borrowing some of that light of the future to give us a taste of it now in this world, that concept. And the future is called Shabbos. You know, Shabbos represents the future. That's why it's called Shabbos HaGodol. We're told that when the Jews were leaving Egypt, Shabbos HaGodol was on the 10th day of Nisan. And Hashem told the Jewish people, I want you to take a sheep and tie it to your bed. And when the Egyptians will ask you what you're doing, because the Egyptians worshipped sheep, you'll tell him that we're preparing this to be sacrificed as a sacrifice for Hashem. The Egyptians are going to want to tear you to pieces because this is their God, and they're going to be powerless. They're not going to be able to. This is, again, the power of faith in Hashem defeating idol worship. Defeating, when we say that the Egyptians worship the sheep, here again, Rav Nosson Zal explains, what does that really mean? The sheep represent wealth, financial wealth. The Torah refers to sheep as ashtarois. And the Gemara says, why are they called ashtarois? Shema ashtarois es ba'alehen. A sheep makes its owner wealthy. And the Gemara goes on to show how every part of the sheep can be turned into money. The wool could be shorn and sold as wool. And the hooves and the this, every part of it is money. It's dollar, dollars, dollars, you know. So when we say the Egyptians worshipped sheep, it means they worshipped financial wealth, that kind of thing, number one. And also, we know that in the signs of the zodiac, every single month has a particular sign. The sign, the symbol for Nisan is the tle, the sheep. So the Egyptians worshipped the zodiac. They believed that everything is in the stars. Paro said, my stargazers have told me such and such, that kind of thing. And our faith goes above the stars. We know that when Hashem told Avram Avinu that he's going to have a child, Avram Avinu said, but I can see in the stars that I'm not destined to have children. Hashem said, no problem, come here. And Hashem lifted Avram Avinu above the stars. And he said to him, you see that you're above the stars? Your children will also be above the stars, above predestination, above destiny, above nature. This is the message one of the messages in Shabbos HaGadol, which again I said is related to chapter 250 in Likutei Moran. And Rav Nosson Zal in Likutei Halachos, in Hilchas Netilas Yodayim, I believe, I'd have to check the exact, there's a place there which is based on that chapter in Likutei Moran where he explains, and this is the concept of Shabbos HaGadol, as we just said. The concept of getting rid of chametz, getting rid of all of your chametz, and eating matzah on Pesach, the Zohar HaKadosh says that chametz is associated with the Yetzer Hara. We know that the Yetzer Hara and the angel of death are the same angel. We're told that it's the same angel who comes to a person and tries to seduce the person to commit a sin. That same angel goes up to heaven to serve as a prosecutor in front of the heavenly court to prosecute against the person, to testify against the person. And that same angel comes down to execute the punishment. So when the Torah speaks about chametz, it uses the term machmetzes. Kol machmetzes lo yisachelu. Do not eat machmetzes. The Zohar HaKadosh says, what is machmetzes? Machmetzes is chametz mace. The first letter of machmetzes is a mem. The last letter is a tuf. The word mace, to die. And in the middle we have the word chametz. Chametz is associated with death. And matzah, the Zohar HaKadosh refers to matzah as medicine. It's called asvosa, a cure, something that heals people. Now, if that's the case, then we shouldn't be eating matzah all year around. How is it that it's only during these 7 days that we don't eat it? if chametz is a terrible thing. And the answer is, one of the answers is, again, that by avoiding eating chametz at this point in time, during these seven days or 8 days, depending on chutz laretz, we accomplish a tikkun that from that point on, the chametz cannot do any harm. It can't harm us in any way. On the contrary, it can serve as a positive thing. Now here I'll mention an incredibly beautiful thing that Rav Nosson Zal mentions in Likutei Halachos. what the difference is between chametz and matzah, we know that there are four basic elements of creation: fire, water, air, and dirt. Those are the four basic elements of creation. When we make bread, we have all four of these elements involved. The flour is like dirt, and again, it comes from dirt. Wheat is something that grows from the ground. That's the dirt. We mix it with water. We put it in the oven. That's the fire. And when we're making bread, there's that additional element that after you prepare the dough, you have to wait for it to rise. You let the dough rise, which means that that element of ruach, of air, gets involved in causing the dough to rise. That's how we make bread. Bread has all four of those elements. Matzah has only three of those elements. Why? Because Rav Nosson Zal explains in Likutei Halachos that air is called ruach. Ruach means air, and the term ruach hachaim, the spirit of life, is also called ruach. Where did the Jewish people draw our ruach hachaim from? We draw it from the Torah. There's a pasuk, the second pasuk in the beginning and at the time of creation, says that the world was tohu vavohu v'choshech al pnei son, that the world was in a state of darkness, v'ruach elokim merachefes al pnei amoyim, and the divine spirit of Hashem hovered over the water. The divine spirit of Hashem means the spirit of life hovers over the water. Water represents Torah. Torah is compared to water many times. The Gemara says just like water flows from a high place to a low place, so too the Torah goes to a person who has humility, humbleness. So where do we draw our Ruach HaChaim from? From the Torah. Now when the Jews were coming out of Egypt, they had not yet received the Torah. We only receive the Torah 50 days later, on the holiday of Shavuos. Therefore, the element of Ruach is no good at that point in time. Because we had not yet received the Torah, there's a Ruach of Kedusha, and there's a Ruach from the other side, from the Sitra Achra. Rabbeinu Zal speaks about this in chapter 8 in Likutei Moran. That the Ruach HaChaim, which we draw from the Torah, from Tzadikim, and there's the Ruach of the Sitra Achra. The Sitra Achra is called a storm wind, a Ruach Se'ora, a storm wind. So because during the holiday of Pesach we had not yet received the Torah, that's why this element of Ruach is forbidden. We don't want to include Ruach in our bread. Therefore, we make matzah, which has only three of those elements: the flour, the fire, and the water. We leave out the element of ruach. After Pesach, on Shvi Shel Pesach, on the seventh day of Pesach, is when the Jews cross the Red Sea, and it says that Hashem revealed Himself on the Red Sea. A maidservant was able to see Hashem more clearly at the splitting of the Red Sea than the prophet Yechezkel, who saw the vision of the throne of Hashem. So that Shvi Shel Pesach was a certain beginning of the revelation of Hashem, which was completed at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai. So therefore, after Shvi Shel Pesach, from that point on, chametz is permitted. Because from that point on, we started receiving the Torah, which is this holy Ruach. So the element of Ruach is no longer a negative item, a harmful negative item. That's one explanation regarding this issue. And then there's another incredibly interesting point, that arrogance is called Gas Ruach, a bloated wind, like a bloated air, a person who's a big shot, arrogant, that kind of thing. That's one of the ways that it's referred to in the Torah. And we know that Paro was the symbol of arrogance. When Moshe Rabbeinu comes to him and says, I'm here representing the Hashem of the Jewish people, he says, Mi Hashem Asher, Who is Hashem that I have to listen to him? I don't have to listen to him. I'm Hashem. I'm the creator. Li Oriv Ani Asisini. I created the Nile River. You know, he considered himself a deity. And throughout, when Hashem keeps punching him and punching him throughout the plagues, he comes back each time with an arrogance. The whole purpose of the plagues was to humble him. And each time he's still strong. Until, what was the final thing, the final blow that defeated Paro? The splitting of the Red Sea. What is that all about? What's the symbolism? What does the splitting of the Red Sea represent? The waters of the ocean represent arrogance. There's a pasuk about the waves of the ocean. If you look at waves, what are waves? It's the water jumping up. So the ocean represents ga'ava. Dry land represents humility. We say at the end of Shmon Esrei, V'nafshi ke'ofor lakol tia. Hashem, let me be like dirt. You know, when we say someone insulted somebody, I insulted him to the ground, you know. So dirt represents humility in this sense, and the ocean, the waters of the ocean, represent arrogance. When Hashem split the Red Sea for the Jewish people, that's because of our humility. There's a pasuk in the Torah in Chumash Dvarim where Hashem says, Loi meirubchem choshak Hashem bochem. It's not because you're big, because you're huge, that Hashem craves you, Hashem loves you. Ki atem hame'at mikol ha'amin. It's because you are the smallest of all the nations. The word ma'at means small in numbers, but the Gemara says, she'atem mam'item atzmechem. You make yourselves small. Even if you're the bankers and you're the brains of every country, wherever the Jews go, they're the brains of the country, still we display humility. So this is why this was the grand finale of all the plagues, was the splitting of the Red Sea, where Hashem said, for the Jewish people who have humility, for them the sea will become dirt. They'll be able to travel through dry land. For Paroi and his people who are displaying arrogance, watch, you're big. Hashem says, I'm bigger. In the song, in the Oz Yoshir that it says afterwards, it says, Oshiro la Hashem ki go'oi go'o. Let us sing to Hashem who is great. Go'oi is miloshin ga'ava. Hashem is the king. Hashem has holy pride. So the Targum on the words ki go'oi go'o is because Hashem is mit ga'er against those who have ga'iva. Hashem says, you're big, watch me, I'm bigger. That's what was displayed at the splitting of the Red Sea. And that's the reason, again, why chametz is forbidden until Shvi Shel Pesach, until the conclusion of Shvi Shel Pesach. Because that's when the gaiva was broken, was destroyed completely, and the humility won over the arrogance. The Jewish people won over Paroi and his armies completely. Any questions, please?
One nakuda, the first thing that you said about the ruach and not being present, and then until Kriyas Yamsuf. So the Torah does specifically make mention that it was a ruach that split the yam.
Exactly. But these are incredible insights in being able to understand what's going on. Like, why this specifically? What was it intended to show, to teach? There's a very interesting piece in the Zohar HaKadosh, which is printed in many Haggadahs, especially in the Breslov Haggadahs, in front. It's brought that on Shabbos, before each one of the three meals, there's a piece from the Zohar HaKadosh that there are some people who recite it as a preparation for that meal on Shabbos, the Friday night meal, the Shabbos morning meal, the meal of Mincha. So before we start the Seder, there's also a beautiful piece from the Zohar HaKadosh, where the Zohar HaKadosh says that it's a mitzvah for us down here to tell over the praises of Hashem regarding going out of Egypt. Why? What does it accomplish? And the Zohar HaKadosh says, because when we do that down here, Hashem gathers all the angels in heaven, and Hashem says, look at my wonderful children. Look how they're talking about me. Look how they didn't forget. They don't forget the wonderful things that I did for them. And this brings incredible honor to Hashem. Hashem, who is a king. When people praise, when people recognize the greatness of the king and they show recognition, that's incredible, incredible Kiddush Hashem. And that's what the Zohar HaKadosh says over there, that this increases the honor and the power of Hashem in the fact that we down here are telling our children, our friends, all the miracles, all the wonderful things Hashem did for us, and Hashem simultaneously is gathering all the heavenly angels to say, look, look at the pride that I take in my children. Now again, angels are robots. They don't have any free choice. So for them to praise Hashem isn't so much of a chiddush. We human beings who have free choice, we have a Yetzirah that tries to get us to forget all the good things in our life and to magnify the negativity and tries to get us not to believe in miracles. So when a Jew displays faith in Hashem, I do believe in miracles. I do believe that this was from Hashem. This was not Mother Nature or anything. And I do remember all the good things that Hashem has done for me. This is tremendous, you know, makes tremendous honor to Hashem, both down here and in heaven. My rabbi, Rav Rosenfeld, when he would sit down to start the Seder, he would go over the Seder plate. The Seder plate has 6 items in it. 2 versions of how the Seder plate should look. There's the Arizal's version and the Vilna Goyen's version. We generally follow the Arizal, especially in these types of things. You have the Zroa on the right, on top, and you have the egg on the left. And then in the middle, you have the Maror. Then you have the Charosis on the right, and you have the Karpas on the left, and then you have the Chazeres in the middle, on bottom, below it. 6 items there. The upper 2, the Zroa and the egg, correspond to the Korban Pesach and the Korban Chagiga. Chagiga was brought on every holiday. The Korban Pesach was brought on Pesach. And again, these are both cooked items, just like a sacrifice was a cooked item. The Zroa also reminds us that Hashem took the Jews out of Egypt. It says, Bizroa Netuya, with an outstretched arm, with a powerful, in a powerful way. And the Zroa is roasted, just like the Korban Pesach was roasted. The Zroa should not be cooked, no water, roasted or broiled, you know, as a remembrance of the Korban Pesach. The egg is also cooked, and the egg reminds us, again, of the Korban Chagiga. The egg also reminds us, we know that even at our greatest moments of happiness, we remember the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. At a wedding, is one of the most happiest events in a person's life. We put the ashes on the forehead of the chassan to remind him, you're starting a new home now. You should know that Hashem's home is in ruins. Hashem's home has not been rebuilt yet. So it's brought that the first night of Pesach always comes out on the same night as Tisha B'Av. There's a remez, At Bash Garda, where we take the first letter of the Aleph Beis and substitute the last letter of the Aleph Beis. The second letter from the beginning with the second letter from the end, and so on and so forth. And that's one of the ways of remembering certain holidays that are connected to each other. So the Aleph represents the first day of Pesach. The Tav is Tisha B'Av. The first day of Pesach always comes out on the same day of Tisha B'Av, and that's also the symbolism in the egg. The egg is a symbol of avelus, of mourning. A mourner eats an egg. Egg is round to remind us of the continuity of life, even after a person passes away. So that's the egg on the Seder plate. And again, we have 6 objects on the Seder plate. And then we have the 3 matzahs. The 3 matzahs correspond to the 3 spheres of Chochma, Bina, and Das, because bread is called brain food. The Torah refers to bread as brain food. We say that when is a child considered to start having a certain level of intellect? When the child is capable of eating grain. So that, again, lechem, there are many reasons to show that the word lechem is bigematria 3 times yud kei vav kei, to show that this is connected, this is what feeds the 3 parts of the brain. So we have the 3 matzahs, and we have 6 elements on the Seder plate, a total of 9. Where's number 10? We know that 10 is shlemus, complete. Where's number 10? The answer is the Seder plate. The Kaira is number 10. That's what completes this whole incredible order. But 1 second, the Kaira is nothing. You don't eat at the Seder plate. You know, the answer is it's nothing and it's everything. Just like the Sphera of Malchus, we always say that Malchus is compared to the moon. The moon has no light of its own, other than it receives from all those above it. That's the symbolism in this Kaira, the Seder plate, that it's nothing, and yet it's what makes order out of everything. It's what keeps everything in a proper place so that they can, all of these 9 elements can function together properly. So that the 10 elements at the Seder correspond to the 10 spheroids. And the Arizal goes into more detail showing how each one corresponds, to the specific sphera. In addition, we're going to be going through 13 steps at the Seder. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, all the 13 things that we do throughout the Seder. Number 13, the last one, is called Nirtzah. What is the word? What does Nirtzah mean? That everything we have done, all this whole procedure, all of these 12 steps that we did now, we believe 100% faithfully that Hashem has accepted what we've done with goodwill, with ratzon, that all of this has generated goodwill on the part of Hashem towards us. That's what Nirtzah is. Now, a person would say, that's nothing. We're not doing anything. It's nothing and it's everything, again. Because the real purpose behind everything we are doing in the world, all of this, the Beis HaMikdash, which was the holy temple, the focus of the entire Jewish people, everything that was done in the Beis HaMikdash, why was it being done? L'rotzayim lefnei Hashem. The Torah repeats those words by each one of the sacrifices, by each one of the procedures. It's all l'ratzayin. It's all in order to generate goodwill, to appease Hashem. Nirtza means to be appeased, and ratzayin also means goodwill. That's the ultimate purpose of everything we're doing. And again, the night of the Seder, we're going through all of these steps, all of these procedures. Why? In order to bring about this goodwill on the part of Hashem towards us, and also to invoke and magnify our desire for Hashem, our yearning and desire for Hashem. That's the peak of everything in serving Hashem. Now, the first paragraph, Holach Mo'anya, we begin by saying this is the poor man's bread, which our forefathers ate in Egypt. Whoever wants, come and join us. Whoever needs, come and join us for the Korban Pesach. I'm going to try to mention some of the things that you probably don't know. I heard from my rabbi, Rav Rosenfeld, in general. The letter Hey in Hebrew represents Das, Seichel sometimes. It's called Hey Hayediyah. In Hebrew grammar, if I say Shulchan, Shulchan means table. If I say the word table, you have no idea necessarily what table I'm talking about. If I say Hashulchan, the table, it means I'm referring to a table that we already discussed, and you know which table we're talking about. That letter Hey in front of a word is called Hey Hayedia. It's the letter Hey which implies that we know which one we're talking about. Midbar means desert. Hamidbar means the desert. You know exactly which desert we're referring to. So the letter Hey represents Das. Rabbeinu Zal shows in chapter 56 in Likutei Moran that there's a level of das where people are able to agree with each other. There's a higher level of das sometimes. There's a type of machlokes, which is called machlokes l'shem shamayim, when people aren't fighting for the sake of fighting. They're fighting in order to bring out the truth. They're debating, they're arguing in order to get to certain truths. Sometimes when people are trying to figure something out, in order to figure out, there has to be some debating going back and forth, which leads them to a much higher level. It brings clarity to the whole situation. So that's this concept of machlokes l'shem shamayim. Rav Nosson Zal explains in Likutei Halachos that the breaking of the matzah, the yachatz, when we break that middle matzah in half, that represents this concept of machlokes l'shem shamayim. It's a breakage that's being done not to destroy. It's two people, when two people start a discussion about something and they're both on opposite sides. I say it's day, you say it's night, I say it's day, night, right, wrong, etc., etc. And we go into it, each one has to prove his side. This is how we increase knowledge tremendously. This is how the Gemara, the Torah Shebaal Peh works. In the Mishnah, he says kosher, he says not. He says, and each one has to bring proofs. And in the process, there's incredible knowledge being revealed. That's this concept of breaking the matzah. Now, the halacha says you're supposed to break it into a larger piece and a smaller piece. The larger piece gets put away for afikoman. The smaller piece remains included between the two matzahs, you know, and it's used, you know, in the mitzvah of achilas matzah. The Arizal says, when you're breaking that middle matzah, try to break it in the shape of a hay. The way a hay is shaped, the one part has like two sides to it, and the other part has a small piece. So you break the matzah in a manner that you're, like, you picture it as if it were four quadrants, and you're breaking the fourth quadrant. You're breaking out that on the left side, that bottom left side quarter of the matzah. So you're breaking it to shape the letter hey. And the letter hey is comprised of like a dalid and a yud. That little leg of the hey is like the letter yud, and the other part of the hay is like the letter Dalid. The Arizal says this is the secret in the opening words, Ha lachmo anya, this is the poor man's bread, di acholu avasana, which our forefathers ate. The word Ha is hay, the letter hay. The word di is the Dalid and the Yud, hinting to us and implying to us what's going to be taking place in this. Because again, this is a night, the holiday of Pesach is a night of Das, of when Hashem revealed the miracles of leaving Egypt, our eyes were opened, you know, to see a whole new understanding of the greatness of Hashem.
Can you just clarify a little more, what is the relevance specifically of it being the Dalid and a yud, which also spells Dai, is in connected Dayenu also. Okay.
Good point. This is discussed in several places in Likutei Moran. I believe chapter 82 in the second half of Likutei Moran, Rabbeinu Zal speaks, that's one of the places that Rabbeinu Zal speaks about this. The letter yud is used to represent Chachma. In Oz Yoshir, in the song that the Jews sang after they came out of Mitzrayim, it says, Oz Yoshir Moshe Uvenei Yisrael. So Rashi points out, in Hebrew it should have said, Oz Shor, he sang. Yoshir means will sing. So Rashi says, Yud Al Shem HaMachshavon Emra. The Yud implies a thought into the future. It's a thought into the future. And it's throughout Sifrei Kabbalah, they stress that the Yud of Yud Kei Vav Kei represents Chochmah. The Dalid represents Malchus, because the word Dalid, Dalus, means poverty, poor. The Malchus is poor because it has no light of its own except what it receives from above. Just like in chapter 1 in Likutei Moran, there Rabbeinu Zal speaks about the Chachma and the Malchus. One of the ways that we display this Chachma and Malchus is a Yud and a Dalid. The Yud shining its light into the Dalid. And this is actually reflected in the letter Yud itself. The way we pronounce Yud, it's as if it were written Yud, Vav, Dalid. The Yud is the Chachma. The Dalit again is the bottom one of the tenths, the Malchus. The Vav is the pipe. A Vav is shaped like a pipe. It's the flow of Chachma shining into Malchus. It's the flow, the sun shining into the moon. That's what the Dalit Yud represents. You see that questions bring out new knowledge. That the whole study of Torah, that's the way it works. Person asks a question, and that brings out a whole new... We're limited in time, so there's thousands of things to say. I'm going to try to select things that you probably don't know, which are interesting things that you can share with your children, your wife, you know, whoever you're going to speak about. One of the things that I remember from my yeshiva days, you know, in elementary school, the story of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Loz ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, that they were leaning in Bnei Brak, it says, and they were telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim all night. Since when did we know that, unfortunately, recently, Bnei Brak was in the news? You know, a terrible, terrible tragedy. One of the first times that a pigua, you know, a terrorist attack took place in Bnei Brak. It just about, you know, never happened. And there were some people that said, look at that, a great rabbi passed away. You know, we know that the tzaddikim are the guardians of the Jewish people. You know, Reb Chaim Kanievsky was respected by everyone in the world, and especially in Bnei Brak, as the leading rabbi. He passed away, and shortly afterwards, the first pigua in Bnei Brak. But since when does Bnei Brak get into the Haggadah? We know Yerushalayim is all over the place, in Shmoneh Esrei, all over the Torah. Since when is Bnei Brak a celebrity, you know, to get into the Haggadah? And the answer is, there's a very important reason here why it tells us they were in Bnei Brak. We know that Rabbi Akiva was a student of Rabbi Tarfon, of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Tarfon. They were his rabbis. We know that he was a student especially of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. The Gemara tells us in many places that Rabbi Eliezer came from Shammai. Rabbi Eliezer is Shamusi, he's called. He comes from Shammai. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer's nature was strict. He was very strict, like Shammai, not like Hillel. We know there's a law in Hilchas Pesach that if a student is sitting by his rabbi at the Seder, the student is not allowed to lean, when he eats the matzah or anything like that, unless the rabbi gives him permission. The rabbi has to specify up front, even though you're my student, I want you to lean when you eat the matzah, you know, when you say, etc., etc. We know that Rabbi Eliezer was from Shammai. He would not have said that. He would not have granted that permission. It says all of them were leaning in Bnei Brak. How was Rabbi Akiva allowed to lean? The answer is, the Gemara shows us in a few places, Rabbi Akiva was the rabbi of the city of Bnei Brak at one time. There's a law that when a person is a rabbi of a city or of a yeshiva, and his rabbi comes to visit him, his rabbi is required to show him respect. Because if not, the students will look at this and they'll look at it like, oh, look at that. You know, we thought he was so great. Look at that. He's just a student. So that's why it specifies here that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva were mesubim. Why? Because it was in Bnei Brak, where Rabbi Akiva was the rabbi, and there even Rabbi Eliezer would have had to allow him to lean, you know, in order. An interesting point. Omar Rabbi Elozar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elozar ben Azariah said, Hare ani keven shivim shana, I am like 70 years old, and I wasn't zoicha that Yitzias Mitzrayim should be saying a whole story. The Arizal reveals again, the Gemara tells us that there was a whole incredible, incredible story in the Gemara where Rabban Gamliel was the Nasi. This story is presented in Brachas, I think page 26, 27, around that area. Rabban Gamliel was the Nasi, and Rabbi Yehoshua was one of the brightest rabbis in the Jewish nation. He was called Rabbi Yeshua ben Chakima de Yehudoin, the wisest of the Jewish people. And there were several incidents where Rabbi Gamliel insulted Rabbi Yeshua. And at one point, the rabbi said, that's it, finished. We're going to depose him. We're going to impeach Rabbi Gamliel. And the Gemara says they went ahead and did it. It's an incredible, incredible story in the Gemara. There's incredible details in it. In the end, Rabbi Gamliel went to apologize to Rabbi Yeshua, and the Gemara said, one second, we're deposing him, then who's going to take over his slot? Rabbi Yeshua is the one who really is probably the most qualified to, but if we do that, it'll be too much of an insult to Rabbi Eliezer. We can't do that. Should we appoint Rabbi Akiva, who is so... can't appoint him. He comes from converts, and therefore he doesn't have enough power behind him. If Rabbi Gamliel should get angry and Chas V'Shalom curse him or look at him in any negative way, he could be vulnerable. And the Gemara said they decided to pick Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was both very bright and wealthy. Wealthy, he doesn't have to come on to people. He doesn't have to be afraid of anybody or anything like that, and also a tremendous chacham. But they said there's a problem. He's 18 years old. So the Gemara says a miracle took place that night that his beard turned white. And they saw this as a sign from heaven that he is qualified. Don't worry about his age at all. So he was 18 years old and looked like a 70-year-old person. This is why he says, Hare ani kiven shivim shana. I am like 70 years. Now, Hare Keben means like Ben, meaning if you add Ben, Beis Nun, if you add 52 to my age, 52 plus 18, I'm 70 years old. I'm 70. The Arizal reveals a secret on this. The Arizal shows that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a Gilgal of Shmuel Hanavi. And the Torah tells us that Shmuel Hanavi passed away at the age of 52. Hare ani kiven, me now at 18, together with the 52 years that I had in my previous lifetime, adds up to 70 years. You see how every word of the Torah has incredible secrets in it, you know, incredible things. We go on to the four sons. It says, the Torah speaks to four sons, a Chacham, a Rasha, a Tam, and a Sheinu Yedei Lishoel. Here again, Rav Rosenfeld taught incredible, from the Arizal, an incredible thing. These four sons correspond to the four worlds. The Olam Ho'atzilus, the highest one of the worlds, is the Chacham. The Rasha is the Olam Ho'asiya. He's the lowest one of the worlds. Then why is he put next to the Chacham? He should be at the end of the list. He should be all the way at the end of the list. The answer is that the Olam Ho'asiya, because it is the lowest of the worlds, it needs the highest level light to be able to reach down to it, to be able to help it. Just like Rabbi Nachman writes in chapter 30 in Likut Imran, the more sick a person is, the more they need a greater doctor to heal them. The more sick a person is spiritually. Rabbi Nezal says there are people that say, you know, do you have a rabbi? Yeah, the rabbi in my shul, that's my rabbi. You're not looking for something bigger? No, what are you talking about? He knows much more than me, so why should I have to look for, I don't have to look for somebody bigger. You know, from him I can learn everything I need, you know. And Rabbi Nachman said that's not the right attitude. The right attitude is that the more a person realizes how far they are from Hashem, the more they need a greater rabbi, a greater tzaddik, to be able to help them, to be able to, who has the ability to reach all the way down to them. And in order for a tzaddik to be able to reach far down, the tzaddik has to be high up. The higher a tzaddik goes, the more it gives him the ability to reach further down. Moshe Rabbeinu, because he was Moshe Rabbeinu, was able to reach out to Yisroi, to the greatest denier of Hashem, the one who had worshipped all idols, and be Makariv him. So that's one message in this. And then there's another message. that I believe it's also from Arizal, that any Chacham who doesn't have a Rasha next to him is not yet classified to be a Chacham. The true Chacham is the one, again, who is involved in reaching out, in sharing his Chachma, and in bringing those people who are furthest away from Hashem, bringing them close to Hashem. That, again, is the symbolism in the Chacham and the Rasha being put together, the Rasha being put right next to the Chacham, instead of all the way on bottom, as you would think is, you know, the proper order. Now, Rabbi Nachman writes in Likutei Moran, in chapter 30, he goes into this, that these four sons are actually the four descendants of Avraham Avinu, which is where everything started. And we know the three holidays, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, correspond to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avraham is Pesach, and that's why we begin the Haggadah with, everyone come and join us. Everyone, whoever's hungry, come and join us. Just like the meat of Avraham Avinu, which was that Hachnos Asorchem, that open house. And the Seder is a time when people especially invite guests, another person, that kind of thing. Yitzchak represents Shavuos, because Shavuos was Matan Torah. They blew the shofar was blown at Mount Sinai. And the thunder and the lightning, that's all Yitzchak, Pachad Yitzchak, Pachad. And the ram, it reminds Hashem of the ram that replaced Yitzchak Avinu at the Akedah. So that's Shavuos. And for Sukkot, there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Ve'yakov nosa sukoiso, Yaakov Avinu traveled to a place called Sukkot. There's a connection between Yaakov and Sukkot. So Pesach is Avraham Avinu. So these four sons are the four descendants of Avraham Avinu, which are Yitzchak, Yishmael, Yaakov, and Esav. Yitzchak is the Chacham. There's a pasuk, Ben Chacham, Yismach Aviv. That when a person has a child who is intelligent, his father is happy, rejoices. The word Yitzchak means to be happy. Tzchok means laughter, happiness. So Yitzchak is the Chacham. Yaakov Avinu is the Tam. There's a pasuk, Yaakov Ish Tam, Yoshev Ohalim. Esav is the Rasha, doesn't need any explanation. And Yishmael is called the She'eno Yodea Lishol. Why She'eno Yodea Lishol? Because Yishmael, the Gemara tells us, did tshuva. How do we know that Yishmael did tshuva? When it came to burying Yitzchak Avinu, when Yitzchak Avinu passes away, it says, Vayikbaru Oisoi, Yitzchak v'Yishmael benoi. They buried him, Yitzchak and Yishmael. Now we know that Yishmael was 13 years older than Yitzchak. It should have said Yishmael and Yitzchak. Rashi points out, quoting the Gemara, that this is an indication that Yishmael did tshuva. And he had Yitzchak go in front of him by showing the respect to Yitzchak, having Yitzchak go in front of him. So Yishmael represents the Baal Tshuva. Now, She'enu Yedei Lishol, there are two interpretations. When a Baal Tshuva starts out, they don't even know what to ask. They have a billion questions. You know, they don't even know what to ask for. That's this She'enu Yedei Lishol. And in addition, Rabbi Nezal writes there in Likutei Moran that when we speak about tshuva, there are levels and levels of tshuva. A person understands to do tshuva for the things I did wrong, the things that I know that I did wrong. There's a higher level of tshuva, which is that I'm doing tshuva even for the things that I did that I didn't even know, not just things that I did knowingly wrong, you know, I knew it was wrong and I did it, but even things that I didn't know they were wrong, number one, or I'm doing tshuva even for sins that I don't know about, sins that I don't even know that I committed. That's like the peak of tshuva, to do that I'm being shoyel, I'm asking for forgiveness for the she'eno yodeas, the things that I don't even know that are wrong. Now the Gemara tells us that the three forefathers are the ones who gave us the three prayers. Avraham Avinu gave us Shachris, Yitzchak Avinu gave us Mincha, Yaakov Avinu gave us Ma'ariv, right? So the Gemara says, Avraham tikein shachris. Avraham Avinu established the morning prayer. It says, so the word shachris, follow me, has all of these four sons in it. It has the shin and the yud, which is she'eno yodea. It has the ches, which is the chacham. It has the tof, which is the tam. And it has the resh, which is the rasha. Avraham tikein shachris means that Avraham Avinu is the one who established these four sons, you know, the tikkun of the four worlds, etc., etc. We're just getting started, and I have to get ready for Shacharis. I apologize. I'm happy we got to spend some time and hopefully to share some interesting things. Any questions, so far on what we said?
I always found it curious that the Baal Gadol calls it Chacham and not a Tzaddik. But I thought that it was more curious that Chacham and Tam are specifically in Rabbi Nachman's story of the Chacham and the Tam. The Tam seems to have more prominence, at least in Rabbi Nachman's eyes, than the Chacham.
It's true. And again, Rabbi Nachman in Likut Imran, you'll see, sometimes uses the words Tzaddik, sometimes uses the word Chacham, the Chacham of the Dor, you know. So those two are sometimes used interchangeably, although there's definitely reasons why. Again, Chachma is the top, and Rosh is the, you know. And in the context of Rabbi Nachman's discussion in that story, he's referring to the Chacham of the Sitrachra. We know that everything has the parallel. It has the good side and the bad side. In that story, in that context, we know Chachma is one of the most important things. Rabbi Nachman starts the Likud Imran with Chachma. Look, but because it's so important, there's the Chacham of Kedusha and the Chacham of the Sitra Achra. You know. Before we forget, I have to add this. Why is this meal called a Seder? What kind of name is that for the Pesach night meal? An incredible explanation from Rav Nosson Zal that we know that the normal order that Hashem follows is you do, I do. You don't do, I don't do. Hashem says, Shuvu Elai, return to me, and I'll return to you. You have to take the first step. We count the 49 days of the Omer. We're climbing 49 steps on the ladder. 50 is Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. Hashem comes down to us. That's the standard order of how Hashem operates. When we were in Egypt, it says we hit such a low that if Hashem would have waited another second, there wouldn't have been who to save. We would have hit minus 50 and it would have been all over, completely all over. So it's brought that Hashem had to change the order. He had to reverse his normal standard procedure. And Hashem had to jump in, just like when a person is drowning. You don't say, hey, give me your hand, you jump, you have to grab the person, you have to go in and pull him out, that kind of thing. So it's brought that Hashem had to change his order. He had to behave shaloikis seder, to go out of his standard order in order to save us, in order to get out of there. We show out that we recognize this, and that's why that light of the night of Pesach, the Arizal says there's an incredible, incredible bright light that comes down upon us on the first day of Pesach, but then it disappears. It disappears. And then we have to work for 49 days to try to get that light back, like on Shavuos. Why does it disappear? Because we didn't really earn it. We didn't really work for it. Hashem had to jump in and save us, even though we didn't necessarily deserve it completely at that time. And that's why this meal, the whole avodah of the night of Pesach, is called Seder. We're showing that we recognize that we hit such a low that Hashem had to change the Seder for us. He had to behave shalik a Seder. And we're doing tshuva for that by showing that we can follow an order. We can go in the proper type of order. Wishing everybody a wonderful Shabbos. All the best.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All the best.
Thank you very much.